morning. Today we would like to talk with Olga Gulina. She's a legal scholar and an expert on migration. Olga was born and grew up in Russia. She studied law at the Bashkir State University in Ufa in Russia and at the University of Potsdam in Germany. She holds a PhD in constitutional law and another PhD in migration law. Now she's living in Berlin, where she has founded the Institute on Migration Policy RUSUMPI. She is a frequent commentator on Russian and European Union migration law and practices. Today, we will talk with her about research in general and research methods and approaches when researching migration in Central Asia. Olga, please tell us a little bit about yourself, how you define and position yourself as a researcher. What are your research interests? What are you currently working on?
At first, hello everyone. Thank you, Christina, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to give this interview. A bit about myself. I was born in the Asian part of Russia, in the Republic of Bashkortostan, near the Ural Mountains, where the geographical border between European and Eurasian continents lays. My father is Muslim, my mom is an Orthodox churchgoer. In 2006, I became a German Chancellor Fellow and moved to Germany. My personal and professional background interfere with each other because they sit too close together and show different aspects of my personality. I am a legal scholar, as Christina mentioned, and writing analytical briefs on migration issues such as legal status of migrants, their rights and freedoms. My last projects are related to human movement and its legal framework on both Eurasian and European continents. The last one was about migrants and diaspora mapping in 8 out of 15 newly independent states, which gained their independence after a collapse of Soviet Union.
What do you understand by decolonial, indigenous, feminist, critical approaches to knowledge production? What are key concerns, issues, and challenges for research and teaching?
It's a very good question. Firstly, speaking on that issue, I would like to remind us that everyone always speaks from a particular position in the social or a power structures. Not me, not you, no one escapes the gender, linguistic, geographical, and ethnic hierarchies in our world system. As many scholars notice it, our knowledge is always situated. Secondly, migration studies through the prism of decolonial and feminist approaches have its own specifics. In the field where ethnic or a gender perspectives coming from one corner of the world, while giving privilege predominantly to another corner, meaning European and Western scholars and their way of understanding. In the modern migration studies, we have a dominant concept which can be called as geopolitics of knowledge. However, by privileging only European Western scholars and their theoretical apparatus, we lose our goal to produce knowledge. As a legal scholar, sometimes I'm not quite happy with terminology used by some colleagues doing research in post-Soviet countries, including Russia. The term illegal migrant is a quite often used definition. However, everyone knows that no human can be out of law. Therefore, an unauthorized migrant or an undocumented migrant or a French word clandestine are better terms to use. At the current moment, research into Russian-speaking migration is characterized by a lack of common agreement on the definition used, resulting in errors in perceptions and in distortion of migration as a phenomenon. A linguistic framework for migration as a social phenomenon has important meaning. Terminology outlines and forms the basis of its social occurrence. The way ordinary people interpret migration is also significant, as well as the terms used by some state or migration bodies.
Here, I think it's also interesting to look how media write about migration. In one of the biggest newspaper, or better called Yellow Press, but it is read by many, many people, it's called Komsomolskaya Pravda, migration was connected to terms like conquest, liars, dangerous, deportation, and even murderers. The articles I've read there on Komsomolskaya Pravda wrote predominantly negatively about migrants. In Izvestia, a quite serious but still pro-government newspaper, racism is not that obvious, but still migrants are mainly connected with negative contexts. So, as you just said, Olga, illegal migrant, this term, is used really often. Can you please give an example from your own research how you try to bring these understandings to life? And what are for you the do's and don'ts in decolonial, decentered knowledge production for students and researchers?
Let me tell you two real stories. The first story has been told me by a colleague of mine working in the Central Asian country on migration project financed by US organization. It's a very important moment. The project was financed by US organization. Once a foreign project leader who was American learned that project documentation written in Russian language use words in male, female, and neutral form. For example, migration is a feminine noun, migrant and migrant remittances are male nouns in Russian language. Project leader was shocked by obvious sexism in Russian language and demanded that this practice has to be stopped immediately. And he asked that all nouns and adjectives in Russian written official project documentation should now be one kind, neutral. He suggested a ban on the use of the pronouns he and she and their replacement with a gender neutral term they. This practice was implemented for a while and then stopped again, because no one in office can correctly transcribe and translate an English written project documentation in a national language of the Central Asian countries. This story teaches us that unlimited passion for biased correctness and attempts to blindly transfer the latest ideological changes can often lead to ridiculous situation. Second story mirrors my personal experience in Central Asian countries. There are many countries in the world, and Central Asian country, one of them, where to be parents of a baby girl is less worth than to be parents of a baby boy. In Central Asian countries, when girls are born in a family one after another, such families start to follow irrational beliefs and practices. One of the most widespread is to give a name, Janil, Burul, or Uljan, to a girl in order to have a boy afterwards. Because all the names like Janul, Burul, Uljan, it's more like more masculine, and on the same way they have a special meaning. For example, Janil means the verb I make a mistake. The name Burul for girl means turn over. And also the variation of the name are Burul Sun and Burul Shah and etc. The parents who want a boy give a name to a girl with the prefix Wul, which means son. Also, when woman delivers a baby girl, no one is going to celebrate. Although a baby boy delivery is always a reason to celebrate. Working with Central Asian migrants, it's essential, it's very important to know that they have two or more variations of their name. A hard pronounced name with a special meaning in their own language, and so-called adoptive version of their name for foreigners. In order to show up a respect to their culture, tradition, it is always better to learn the right version of the name and know about its background.
Actually, I would even go further and say that it's important to know local languages when you're doing research in Central Asia. When you know the local language, let's say when you go to Uzbekistan, for example, and you're able to talk in Uzbek with the locals, they treat you differently. The Russian language is connected to Russia and to the colonial period during the Soviet Union. In rural areas, you're sometimes even unable to communicate with the inhabitants if you don't know Uzbek. So for research within the ordinary citizens and in rural areas, I mean, not with elites in bigger cities, it's really important to know the local language. Do you think, Olga, the knowledge of a local language in Central Asia and in general wherever you do research and research in this language can be seen as a method of restoration of what has been destroyed during colonial times?
Decentered knowledge production is a method of restoration, or better to say, reparation. It aspires to rediscover and acknowledge lives, life experience, culture and knowledge of our neighbors, their and our forefathers, foremothers, that has been pushed aside and forgotten or discredited. Decentered approaches seek to consider ideas, social practices, histories, identities and beliefs as part of myriad of means of being a human. Therefore, everyone has to learn and make visible the connection between knowledge, social practice, and social action.
Thank you, that's a good point. Can you help us a little bit to receive this knowledge? Maybe you have any interesting key readings or material of any sort that inspired you, provided you with insight that you can recommend?
Oh, there is a bunch of academic literature related to the issue we have discussed. I am so sure that you know and was advised to read some pieces in English and German. For those who are interested in migration, post-Soviet countries, Central Asia, through the lens of this approach, I can recommend a podcast called «Тоже Россия» and made by colleagues of mine in Russia. This podcast sequence is dedicated to migration art, culture, daily life of migrants from post-Soviet countries in Russia, and searches for answers of who they and we are, why we define us versus them, and etc. Secondly, there are a couple of books and articles that seems to be of interest to you. A couple of years ago, a colleague of mine, Dr. Nikolai Zakharov, published the book with the title Race and Racism in Russia. This book explains well how Soviet past influenced reality in multi-ethnic, multi-religions today Russia, and what kind of danger lays in growing Russianness and whiteness's concept for this country. It's remarkably interesting to understand why the high level of exclusion attitudes towards newcomers from Caucasus and Central Asia has changed Russia over the years.
Here, I also would like to share my own experience. When I was living in Kazakhstan, in Astana, my flatmate, who was Kazakh, had to go on a business trip to Moscow for a few days, and she was really afraid of going there because of the racism towards people in general from Central Asia. Although she belonged to the educational elite and was working for a European institution, so she was based in the center of Moscow and didn't look like someone really poor. For me, this fear was hard to understand, although I was reading a lot about racism and was living in Russia before. But I couldn't imagine that racism in Russia affects literally everyone from a certain region, regardless of the educational background or status. So I think this example shows very well what you have just said, Olga, that the level of racism is really high in Russia. But now please continue.
And thirdly, I personally recommend Rethinking an Argumentation made by Douglas Murray in his new book, The Madness of Crowds, Race, Gender and Identity. Murray examines sexuality, race and gender and come up with conclusions that our society gets insane because highly educated people cling to a new religion known variously as a social justice or identity politics. Murray's thoughts turn on the distinction between identity as a hardware and software, where race, sexual preferences, and gender are hardware. He convinced his reader that it is a wrong idea that all races and gender groups must have equal outcomes. If someone wants to train his argumentation, reading the Murray's book and building argumentation against Arthur can be a good exercise. While I totally disagree with about 90% of Murray's views on political and social issue, I read his book to get a different perspective, which I believe to be a valuable exercise everyone should do from time to time. It is important to mention, if you want to become a good specialist, a good researcher, never read only scholars which share your attitudes to the topic. Always keep eyes on publication of scholars from opposite clique and knowledge fraction. It's my suggestion.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Olga, very much for the very concrete recommendations and in general for this interesting, very interesting talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.